This is Cradle My Heart Radio with your host, Kim Cotola. Cradle My Heart Radio, preventing abortion and helping those it hurts.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken within, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
And now, Kim Cotola and Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is Cradle My Heart Radio, and our mission, as you know, if you listen regularly, is preventing abortion as well as helping those whom it hurts. And the idea that we would have a mission to prevent abortion is not really a new idea. It's an idea that has its roots, as a matter of fact, in the earliest iterations of the women's movement here in the United States and elsewhere. And that's a story that's not often told, and when it is told, it has been told very well by our guest for this edition of Cradle My Heart Radio. We are joined by Sarin Foster of Feminists for Life. Sarin, welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio.
Thank you, Kim. It's a great joy to be here, and I absolutely love your mission. Feminists for Life is here to systematically eliminate the coercive factors that would drive women to abortion, in particular, the lack of practical resources and emotional support. And one of our endeavors is specifically focused on helping women to prevent abortion, one on campus and another one on our new website, Raising Kids on a Shoestring. So I'm very excited that your mission so mirrors what we do and vice versa.
Feminists for Life has a slogan, "Women deserve better." That is your brainchild, if you will, no pun intended there. But you've been leading Feminists for Life since 1994, and to my mind, there have been many changes in the women's movement during that time. And I'd love to get your perspective on recent history, recent events in the feminist movement. But first of all, you know, there are those who would say that if you cannot be a feminist and be pro-life, that it's an incompatible thing, that the very foundation of feminism is reproductive freedom, or whatever slogan or rhetoric they're using today to mask the reality of child destruction through abortion. So let's start right there about being a pro-life feminist.
Well, I have to say, first of all, that I would have been a pro-life feminist whether I found out that the early American feminists were pro-life or not, because to me, feminism, the basic tenets are nonviolence, non-discrimination, and justice for all. And abortion, therefore, is a violation of the tenets of the first three principles. So it was interesting for me to find Feminists for Life, a group that I didn't know existed before Roe v. Wade. A year before Roe v. Wade, our co-founders realized that there was a movement within the 70s women's movement to embrace abortion. There were a couple of men going around the country saying to women, look, if you want to have rights like a man and be hired like a man and paid like a man and promoted like a man, you can't let your fertility get in the way. And that those were the founders of NARAL, the National Association to Repeal the Abortion Laws. But also about that same time, there was an old woman named Alice Paul, who when she was very young was the suffragist who was successful in leading a 75-year-old long movement of suffrage. Women have the right to vote in this country because of her efforts. She followed in the footsteps of Susan B. Anthony and Elizabeth Cady Stanton and the other early American feminists who, of course, wanted to achieve the vote. But the other thing that they wanted to do was to protect women and children from abortion in a variety of different ways. They advocated how abortion hurts the woman, how abortion kills the child, what women need, what women want, what children deserve. And so when Alice Paul was very old, she told a friend of hers that Feminists for Life wasn't the first pro-life feminist. Actually, she told Pat Goltz, one of our co-founders, that we were not the first pro-life feminists, that the early American feminists were pro-life. And so at that point, the board commissioned Mary Crane Durr, the late pro-life feminist historian, to find this information for Feminists for Life, along with some other researchers. And so we put together this incredible document called First Wave Feminists. And it's about remarkable pro-life women and other suffragists you should know. And it documents our rich pro-life feminist history, from Susan B. Anthony to Elizabeth Cady Stanton to this one woman named Victoria Woodhull, who was the first woman to run for president of the United States, along with Frederick Douglass. He didn't accept the nomination, but she did. And there are just such powerful phrases in this that we have revealed, you know, for this generation. And we've been doing this on college campuses for a couple of decades now, sharing this this pro-life documentation. And last year, last school year, I sent it in the spring semester to pro-life, well, to women's history professors, gender and history professors, now they're called, across the United States, so that we can start educating them as well as the students that we've been reaching through the pro-life movement. What they always felt and what they believed, is Tennessee Claflin, for instance, says, childbearing isn't a disease, but a beautiful office of nature. And I think that's absolutely, you know, so true, and something that through your work, you know, you show this beauty. And the feminists also talked about how hard it was for women, too. And there's this one woman named Dr. Charlotte Lozier who was dragged into a clinic by a man who was not her husband to have an abortion. And he becomes belligerent. He insists that she has an abortion. He also has a wife, but this is not this young girl, Carolyn Fuller. And he starts escalating his threats against this woman doctor, Dr. Lozier. So Dr. Lozier offers help to this young woman, but also has this man arrested. And the paper at the time, along with the Revolution, Susan B. Anthony's newspaper, you know, they both of them are giving accolades to this woman. And there was a whole movement during the suffrage era of pro-life women doctors who enter medicine just because they are so amazed by what beauty is going on inside of a woman's body. Dr. Elizabeth Blackwell, the first woman to become be awarded a medical degree and placed on the British medical director, she writes in her diary that her motivation to become a doctor in part was because she was so horrified, so horrified by women or men who would perform abortions. And so there's just a rich group of activists. There are young activists who are talking about suffrage and in beautiful terms. But there's this one woman, I think, who best says what Feminists for Life believes in our mission today. This woman named Maddie Brinkerhoff says in the 1860s, when a man steals to satisfy hunger, we may safely conclude that there's something wrong in society. So when a woman destroys the life of her unborn child, it is an evidence, either by education or circumstances, that she has been greatly wronged. And I think that for us, we look at those circumstances, and we look at her need for education. To Feminists for Life, the three greatest drivers of the feminization of poverty are the lack of education, the lack of ability to work in a family-friendly atmosphere, and the paternal support that is so unfortunately missing in so many families across America. And so those are the three things that we would like to focus on, mm-hmm. as well as connecting people to addressing their immediate need through the pregnancy resource centers, domestic violence shelters, other pregnancy resource offerings, you know.
Right. True choice, true alternatives. And that's what we're all about as well. We definitely partner with the pregnancy help movement. We definitely have a real burden for the individual in the local church to know about this, because as John Enzer once said to me, you know, abortion isn't just happening in Washington, D.C. It's happening in our neighborhoods. The mm-hmm. need is real and it's all around us. And the pregnancy help movement is meeting that need. But it's just that the average person isn't aware that, you know, like-minded folks have decided to become the answer. And so that is fabulous that it is happening on college campuses, because we know that it's in the launch phase that these pregnancies provide so much of a threat, or present, I should say, so much of a threat to the young women and men that are experiencing them. Sarin Foster is our guest, president of Feminists for Life. And Sarin, I want to talk with you because, you know, some of those statements that you have made are so striking about the beauty of childbearing, about, you know, how natural it is and that it is not a disease, pregnancy not a disease, et cetera. But it's the rhetoric that looms large today comes more from people like Judith Jarvis Thompson saying that, you know, bodily autonomy is what we need to take into consideration, that it's that if even if it is a human being, and I hope I'm not mischaracterizing her position, but even if it is a human being, it's so dependent upon the woman that it is her right to do whatever she sees fit with that pregnancy.
In February, we had a huge debate at Yale, and it was the Yale Debate Society that invited me to be their speaker in support of a motion that was, for the first time, I've heard a million debates, and I've you know, heard about all these debates with many, many different groups, and usually I don't participate because what it was supposed to be a debate at Harvard, for instance, or what was supposed to be a common ground effort ended up being a debate. I've participated in another one in Trinity, but usually I don't participate in debates because it just is a circular, pointless conversation where one side says, what about the woman? And the other side answers, what about the baby? And what I like about Feminists for Life is that we answer the first question, what about the woman? And the answer is, women deserve better than abortion. And abortion is a reflection that we have not met the needs of women. And that the pro-life movement has been doing the heavy lifting to meet the needs of women, and you're absolutely right. It's about connecting women to those resources and changing the culture in support of abortion. So a similar thing happened at Yale, and it was a parliamentarian-style debate with seven different debate societies. It was very interesting, very heated and passionately argued debate on both sides. It lasted for well over 3 hours. I mean, this was intense. But what was really so sad to me was when women would get up there and talk openly about their sexual history and then start talking about a bodily autonomy. And I started sitting there going, your bodily autonomy? I mean, if you didn't want to be pregnant, you know, and you believe that you should be in control of your body, then it doesn't make any sense. If you believe in control, then either you do control it, number one, or number two, you've got to understand the fact that everything in this life isn't perfect and planned. I think that's the most important part. I mean, people are sexually assaulted and, you know, something happens to them if they became pregnant. I mean, we have to support two victims, for instance. But for the majority of cases where people are talking about bodily autonomy, and they don't want to be pregnant, they are. I mean, they're in contrast to each other, these ideas. And the criticism of a human being, and they are not human beings, constantly hearing that these children were not human beings because they were inside the womb was very disturbing to me because it is a human and it is a being. Enough said. That's it. That's the point.
Embryology 101.
It's so basic. I mean, there's a denial going on, but then we have to remember a couple of factors. It's really important to remember that, number one, this generation has never known a day without legalized abortion, and they do. Mm-hmm. They have sold to this generation as a right, and you have a lot of people on college campuses who were part of that 70s movement or who maybe have had an abortion, and they believe that they sacrificed their children so that other women would have opportunities in the workplace, that they would have opportunities. Well, the question is, why do women feel they have to sacrifice themselves and their children to meet everybody else's expectations? So I asked them plainly, have you ever seen a woman who was pregnant at Yale? Deafening silence. And I find out the last time anybody's reported knowing a pregnant woman was on campus was in the 1980s, a woman named Maggie Gallagher. I mean, so I think it speaks volumes about the hostile environment towards pregnant women and expectant fathers, too, frankly. I mean, the better the school, the more hostile it is for a woman to be pregnant. I mean, it's okay to have sex, but don't get pregnant because that means you're stupid. I mean, that's the message they send to women. And they set up systems that aren't supportive to women. And that's what Feminist for Life is doing on college campuses, is saying, look, you know, I'm not sure that people have actually even come to the point where they actually think about this, that they've been so arguing abortion that they haven't been arguing the right to exercise the rest of the choices. What about marital parenting? What about single parenthood? What about adoption options, single, open, closed, in between? What about kinship care? What about guardianship options? And more importantly, what about all those people who are supposed to support her, those concentric circles of support, men, the father of the child, her parents, her friends, her doormates, her co-workers, her employer? I mean, when you look around the landscape, and if a woman sits there and goes to her campus, like one of our former board members said, I was pregnant, I was on campus, I was in my last year of grad school, five women living in a two-bedroom apartment, I was drowning in debt, and I looked around my campus, and there was no housing, there was no maternity care, there was no child care, and I thought, what choice? And if you think about it, you'll see that in high school, they have support in many high school campuses where you have child care. But they don't do this when women are married in law school, or they're getting their medical degree. Are we saying to families that we don't expect parents who are married to each other to have sex and wait until after they've gotten their second degree or their third degree? This is ridiculous. I mean, this country, you know, values education, but why is it that today in the Monthly Reader I'm reading all about the hostility towards women on campus by people who are, you know, leaders in the women's movement? I mean, who created this hostility? You know,
Sarah, this is a little bit of a diversion, but I think it definitely pertains to what you're saying here. And that the objectification of women, because I'm just old enough that was huge, boy, back in my day. Mm-hmm. You just could not, you know, use a woman in a sexual way in an ad for a car, for example, or, oh, my goodness, you know, your company got a black mark forever. And now we have instead the Ivy League aspiration of selling your eggs, you know, for designer reproduction for $50,000 plus. And I mean, that's again, a totally separate conversation, because that is not without its heartache and lifelong consequences either. But the fact that that is acceptable, and you'll see it on Craigslist, and you can find, just Google it, just Google, you know, Ivy League eggs, and you'll find stories galore about this phenomenon. And yet there is nothing for that woman on campus who is pregnant. It's an absurd pass for us to say that this is somehow advocacy for women, that this is somehow beneficial to all women. You know, the conformity that is required for us to believe that all women only want career, that all women would see motherhood as a lethal impediment to progress in their lives, is just absurd. I mean, you really have your work cut out for you with this generation, Saren. And I want to know what you find most effective as you engage with women in this age group and women on campus, the young adult women of the next generation, who I think have inherited a default feminist worldview in our culture. It's a default. I mean, my son and my stepson will defend to the death women's rights, you know, and the feminist agenda and worldview, if you will. So what works to break through the parts of that are so off when it comes to the beauty and the truth of women's, you know, splendor as mothers?
Well, for Feminists for Life, and I have to say, number one, that there's a reason why we won the debate at Yale. The pro-life side won at Yale because it was the pro-woman side. And so what I do when I go to college campuses is to explain first and foremost that the early American feminists were pro-life, that the second wave feminist movement was betrayed by leaders of NARAL to convince them that they should capitulate, you know, in the workplace and in schools, and got to kind of fit a male model. And I also reveal what Sarah Weddington did before the Roe v. Wade court in terms of demanding that women be allowed to have an abortion rather than deal with the injustices that were happening to women and still are occurring today. The very reasons why women have abortions, overwhelmingly, women who have abortions are poor or financially challenged. 61% of them already have children, at least one dependent or more. Almost half, 44%, are college age, just like them. I remind them that many of their siblings and peers are missing from the classroom or the auditorium where I'm speaking. And I talk about what we're doing on college campuses today across the country to make changes, great changes, so that women do not have to choose, will not have to choose between sacrificing their children and their careers and their education, because education is one of the very ways that we eliminate poverty in this country for families. And so it's really important for her to complete her high school education as well as, if she can, a college education or a vocational education, so that she has something to, you know, to not only for her own sake, you know, so that she's well-educated, but for her children's sake and her job opportunities. And so we talk about what we're doing on college campuses to address the unmet needs of housing, daycare, maternity coverage. And the students are really engaged on both sides, and it just turns the whole dynamic around. When you start focusing on what you can do to make the world better, there is something that resonates in the spirit of most students that they want to help. And when we also talk about the fact that we want it to also help support those women on the tenure track who don't usually achieve tenure until their 40s. And if they go off the tenure track and take breaks, they can lose their ability to achieve tenure. And so we think that's really harmful to women who want to achieve tenure. And women who are even pro-choice, who are professors, have agreed with us on this point, that it is very coercive to women, that they don't, you know, a man can have children, as many as he wants, during his career, and it's not going to affect his employment, because he's still going to probably show up for work, you know, with the exception of some days, you know, off for special occasions, the birth of his child, et cetera. But overwhelmingly and disproportionately, women have responsibility for children for a variety of reasons. And, you know, there needs to be some accommodation and recognition of this. And what about job sharing in the workplace, or flex time in schools, et cetera? And so when students start brainstorming about what the problems are and actually go beyond the original, you know, argument about legal versus illegal, and instead go to the point, why is she thinking about having an abortion? And if you, like Feminists for Life, takes the idea that the reasons that women have abortion become our mission to overcome, we will do this, and we will do this without fighting. We will do this successfully. We will change not just hearts and minds, but lives, and because really lives are on the line here. And we turn women's misery into great joy for many people, and that's what I love about being a Feminist for Life. And I love the way it inspires other organizations to do more and better. People tell us all the time they've started a program, a project, changed something they did within their pregnancy center, within their church, within their workplace, because it was inspired by us. But then they own it. They own their success. One man sat there and redesigned his office plant, and his wife said, make sure you have a place for mothers to breastfeed, you know, in a relaxed environment. So they have one room with a Lazy Boy and a refrigerator in case she wants to pump. There's a lunchroom that's divided into a couple areas where one has family, all these young kids running around who have been in the on-site child care center. And then people who don't, who just want to be quiet and alone, you know, whether their parents or not, can be in the other cafeteria. I mean, it's just amazing what people do when they start thinking about how to better meet the needs of their students, their employees, and people in their community who really are poor and need help. And it's such great joy for those of us who serve. It's not that we get more out of it, I'm quite sure, than they do.
Saren Foster, our guest, and we're almost out of time, Saren, but I urge you, if you're listening and not familiar yet with Feminists for Life, that you would check out their website and Saren's landmark speech, The Feminist Case Against Abortion. We've got that linked at cradlemyheart.org. But with just about a couple of minutes remaining, I want you to talk about, Saren, how best to become an agent for change.
Feminists for Life members, when they're new, they get two essential tools. They get the documentation that the early American feminists were pro-life, so they get this whole magazine full of nothing but quotes. And then the other thing that we give new members as tools is a document called Pro-Woman Answers to Pro-Choice Questions. There are talking points, but also the most oftenly asked questions and how to answer them, and more importantly, how to redirect the conversation back to the resources and support that women need and deserve. And I think on a personal level, when somebody comes to you and says they're pregnant, scared, and they're seeking an abortion, tell her you deserve better. Women deserve better. She deserves better. And that you will help her, and you will lead her to our website called kidsonashoestring.com. The whole name is Raising Kids on a Shoestring. And it will link to the pregnancy care centers, but also a whole host of free, frugal, and creative solutions that will help her throughout her entire life, whether she chooses to become a parent or not. And so I think that holistically we will and we shall help women one at a time, you know, in whatever way that we're best called to do this, whether it's one-on-one, whether it's through an organization, through a church, through a pregnancy care center, et cetera, whether you're a human resources director, an owner of a small business, et cetera. You know, keep it in the back of your mind, you know, am I making this a place where I welcome life? And then do something. And if you need help and advice, come to our website, come to Feminists for Life. We'd be happy to help you.
Thank you, Sarah Foster, for being our guest. Now, stay with us. Coming up here on Faith Radio, we'll open up the phones and take your phone calls. Maybe you'd like to react to our conversation with Sarah Foster or follow along with us some of the top stories on the cause and case for life in the news this week. This is Cradle My Heart Radio. Our phone number is 1-800-811-3003. Stay with us.
A safe place to connect with others, finding God's love after abortion. This is Cradle My Heart Radio.
This is where the healing begins. Oh, this is where the healing starts. When you come to where you're broken with Him, the light meets the dark. The light meets the dark.
Cradle My Heart with Kim Cotola. Join the conversation. Call toll-free 800-811-3003. 800-811-3003.
Thanks so much for being with us tonight. We are live here on this 3rd of April, 2016, and fresh off the Heartbeat International Conference for 2016, a gathering of 1,100 people representing pregnancy help centers all around the world. I think 22 nations were represented, and there are over 2,000 Heartbeat affiliates, I think, in the United States alone, pregnancy resource centers that help women with diagnosing the pregnancy, confirming it. Many are medical clinics that offer an ultrasound test and follow through throughout the course of the pregnancy, as well as the parenting phase, and helping couples as well as women. Maternity homes are part of the Heartbeat mission as well. It's just a wonderful gathering every year. And a couple of highlights that I wanted to share with you. One was meeting Kathy DeFiore. We reviewed the movie Gimme Shelter when it came out. I guess it was a couple of years ago now, just about 2 years ago in 2014, early 2014. And it's the story of a runaway teen who ends up getting help when she finds out that on top of her many life issues, which have caused her to run away, she's pregnant. She ends up in the home of her father, whom she really has not ever known. And there's a huge culture clash because she's been living in the hood with her mother, who has drug issues. And her father is married to a woman and living in a huge house in an upscale neighborhood. And Apple doesn't fit with either of them. But she finds a home with Kathy DeFiore, who is portrayed in the film by the house mother, who befriends James Earl Jones as the chaplain. This thing has an all-star cast. Brendan Fraser plays the distanced dad. We've got Rosaria Dawson as the mother. Apple is played by Vanessa Hudgens. It's just a wonderful movie. And we've got a copy of it tonight as our pro-life resource at 1-800-811-3003 with your name on it. Our first caller with a question or comment to join the conversation tonight. 1-800-811-3003. This DVD really impacted me when I saw it because I don't think that anybody is really prepared for this true story. Raw reality. And here's the thing about the film. Apple, when we first meet her, is a very unsympathetic character. We believe that she probably deserves whatever harm is befalling her because she's very bitter. She's very rebellious. She's very sarcastic. She's a nasty kid. And what we end up finding out about Apple, and by extension, all of the young women who are desperate and on the run from something when they find out that they are pregnant, is that what they need is love. And, you know, as a person who chose abortion, not as a teen, not as a runaway teen, oh my goodness, I had no excuse in that area. I had a wonderful home and wonderful parents, and I was 23 years old, and the decision was all mine, and my parents raised me to know right from wrong, and I should have known better with that choice. But I didn't have anybody like Kathy DeFiore offering me a place to come and stay and be loved and have my child. But what I did share in common with young Apple was a poverty of spirit and also a lack of moral backbone that would have made me bold to face down my fears and give life to my child. In that way, I was very unlike young Apple because she is a courageous character. The beauty of her choice betrays the cowardice from which I suffered, and which I think is at the heart of every choice for abortion. And forgive me if you suffered from a coerced abortion. Cowardice often not that of the mother when I say there's cowardice at the heart of every abortion. In this film, Give Me Shelter, having been victimized and brutalized by so many for so long, Apple rejects the choice of her own well-being over the life of her child. You know, and if instead, like me, your strength failed, just know God can change a coward's heart and make us brave today. And if you coerced another, you can look to the Father's redemption in this story for your hope. It's never too late to do the right thing now. So we have a copy of Gimme Shelter, the DVD. 1-800-811-3003 is our number, and all you need to do is join us on the air and say hello and join the conversation. Maybe you have a story of teen pregnancy. Maybe you have a story of interacting with someone in the pregnancy help movement. Or maybe you have a story of feminism. If you joined us from the top of the program, listening to our conversation with Sarah Foster, 1-800-811-3003. I loved her definition of feminism. She said to be feminist is to be in favor of non-discrimination, in favor of non-violence, and in favor of justice for all. There's no agenda that has anything to do with pro-life, pro-choice, overtly in their principles. And yet, if we follow these principles of non-discrimination and non-violence and justice for all, to extend to the youngest members of the human family, the preborn children, we see that a feminist worldview, a feminist approach to life would have to include saying that abortion needs to be off limits. It does not provide justice to unborn children. It is certainly not non-violent. What are your thoughts about that? 1-800-811-3003 is our number. Our pro-life resource tonight, a copy of Gimme Shelter. Brendan Fraser was so supportive of this project that he fulfilled his role as Apple's father without a salary. What does that tell you about the value of this story and Kathy DeFiore and that others might know that a maternity home, which was, you know, the solution several generations ago for pregnancies that took place outside of wedlock. Then there were abuses and there were problems and the model changed, but there are still maternity homes that are operating and they're still doing beautiful work, sharing love. 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. We had a caller off the air who wanted to say thank you for Cradle My Heart Radio, and I really appreciate that. You know, everybody needs a little bit of encouragement, and we appreciate that. And he also shared that he has two grandchildren who are alive because of science. He said there were infertility issues, but that science allowed the children to be conceived and to be born, and he doesn't understand why science then would take away life instead of just giving it. What a great question. 1-800-811-3003. If you would like to receive our pro-life resource tonight, join us on the air. A question or comment at 1-800-811-3003. And as always, the rules here, the ground rules are that you do not have to give your name. You can call us anonymously, but we would like you to say hello if you'd like to, and join us on the air if you'd like to receive our resource. If you don't want your voice to appear on the air, but you want, if you have a question or comment, of course you can get in touch with us via email. Just go to cradlemyheart.org and use the contact page, and we will definitely return your contact that way. And if it's important to you that your contact would remain anonymous or off the air, please do note that in your note to us. 1-800-811-3003. You know, a number of weeks ago, on Palm Sunday, I guess it would have been two Sundays ago. Wow, Easter went quickly. I wrote about redemptive giving and the story of Zacchaeus, which occurred on the first Palm Sunday as Jesus was making his way into Jerusalem, coming through Jericho. And I wrote about how redemptive giving is not atoning for sin, but redemptive giving happens as a response to what we have received already from Jesus Christ by his grace, to know that we are forgiven. And it's that impulse in us that says, I'm changed and I want the world to know it. So I want it to give an outward sign of the change that Christ's love has wrought in me. Zacchaeus did that, and he did it in a way that fulfilled the need to atone for, to make an offering after extortion, because he was engaged in extortion as a chief tax collector. And we wrote about some of the ways to redemptively give after abortion in ways that help heal our hearts. Sponsoring a child through a Christian outreach like Compassion International, volunteering at church in the children's ministry, seeking out and helping the poor in your area. Certainly if there is a maternity home or a pregnancy resource center, you would be trained. If you have had an abortion, they would take you through a healing resource of some kind, a healing Bible study or counseling experience, so that you would then be free to serve others out of the overflow of your heart. Bringing beauty to life by dedicating a bench or enhancement in a public park. There are limitless ways to engage in redemptive giving. Even speaking up for the unborn within your circle of influence counts. And in response to that blog post, we did have an anonymous comment left. And it was from a person who said that he was responsible for two of his own and two of his young daughters having abortions. He hadn't found any writings on the topic along the lines of what we had written on a redemptive giving. And he says he feels so guilty because he's asked God over and over to forgive him, but he can't stop feeling guilty. And this was something that was really heart-wrenching when he said that he thinks he's being punished because his daughter is now in her late 30s and hasn't had any children. Please, would you share some words of encouragement for this father who's grieved, if you have a story similar to his? 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. He has asked us to pray for the daughter who wants babies so badly and is running out of time, and he says it's not her fault. He made her get the abortions. What do you say to a grieving father? 1-800-811-3003. 1-800-811-3003. Let's go to the phones and say hi to Jim, and welcome to Cradle My Heart Radio. Hi, Jim. How are you tonight?
Real good. I really enjoy your program. I am up at checking my cattle up here in northern Minnesota, and I usually can get KF&W 1200. And I found that the new year, or you're talking about Apple, is so interesting. I had a dear friend that that had an abortion back in 73, and she feels the same way you do. And of course, she couldn't have children for 12 or 14 years after, too. It, and it damaged her fallopian tube area. And so, but, you know, she did have two birth children, and she's so thankful. But I found it very interesting. So thank you very much.
All right, Jim, thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for your call. And you stay with us off the air. We'll get your mailing address so we can send you a copy of our resource tonight, the DVD, Give Me Shelter. That we only had one copy of that particular DVD, but we have another one that is very encouraging about an untimely pregnancy. And this one is a story that resonates with those who were faced with the choice for abortion in order to protect a career. Young women in the launch phase in their early 20s are often free to pursue sexual relationships and yet responsible for their future because they are no longer under their parents' care and they're earning a living. And when the pregnancy presents itself, there can be so much pressure, not only from the partner, but from their friends, from their family, that they would get on with their lives and with their career, and that abortion is the answer. This is a beautiful DVD, and this one stars Rebecca St. James, and she does a brilliant job portraying Sarah and the dilemma that she faces. And so we have a copy of Sarah's Choice for you if you will call and join us on the air with a question or comment at 1-800-811-3003. Again, you do not have to give your name. You can call anonymously. You can choose a pseudonym for yourself, an alias, if you would like to receive a copy of Sarah's Choice. Stay with us a short break, and then we'll talk about some of the encouraging news stories in the news this week on the issue of life, especially pregnancy resource centers in New York not having to comply with the law when the legal battle has been going on for 5 years in New York. We'll tell you about that coming up next. Stay with us.
Seeking to help others find God's love after abortion. Cradle My Heart Radio with Kim Cattola. Call toll-free at 800-811-3003.
So glad that you could join us tonight here at Cradle My Heart Radio for our live portion of the program. If you heard our interview with Saren Foster, Feminists for Life, there probably is something new that has occurred to you. Maybe it's a new take on feminism altogether. You know, their organization has done such a great job of rescuing the history of America's first wave of feminist thought, which was absolutely pro-life. They were extremely opposed to abortion because of the exploitation of women. And it wasn't simply because of the back alley. It was because of what it is, violence against children and violence against women. And so if you if this was new information to you, or if you consider yourself a feminist who is pro-choice, we welcome your thoughts, too. You know, it's all about the exchange of ideas. And I'll tell you that I was a feminist who was pro-choice for many years, not only when I chose abortion, but for many years afterwards. But I changed my view on that. And there's some important reasons why. And I'd love to talk that over with you if you would. Give us a call at 1-800-811-3003. Promise not to make it a hostile call. Absolutely. Give you my word. 1-800-811-3003. Our pro-life resource tonight is the film Sarah's Choice on DVD, and it stars Rebecca St. James and Charlene Tilton, as well as Dick Van Patten and comedian Brad Stein. And it's a very sweet film about a very tough topic, and it's well done. And it came out a number of years ago, and I think it would be suitable for you to play for a youth group and a great conversation starter for the young women in your life who are not yet perhaps even in the launch phase, but facing these choices that we do have as young women. 1-800-811-3003. I mentioned that I was at the Heartbeat International Conference, and one of the things that happened there was a screening of the Hush documentary. And I've seen the trailer for this, and we've got a story about it linked at our Facebook page, which you can find at cradlemyheart.org, a link to our Facebook page. But wow, This was one of the most eye-opening films that I've ever seen. You know, we have talked with a number of experts on this program about the abortion and breast cancer link. We've talked with experts about the abortion and mental health impact. But I wasn't as aware as I on those other topics of the link between abortion and preterm birth. And this film was put together by a documentarian, the film's director, Poonam Kumar Gill, is a respected member of the arts community and a Chatelaine nominee for Woman of the Year, who served as writer, director, and producer on 7 other documentaries to date. And she brings a combination of personal motivation and investigative ability to the task. She considers herself a product of feminism and definitely pro-choice. But she set out to find out why there is so much controversy about the abortion breast cancer link. Why do the camps line up? One camp saying there is absolutely no link, and one camp saying there is proven scientific research we can show you documenting the link. The same situation exists when you start asking about abortion and adverse mental health reactions. And the same divide exists when you start talking about abortion and preterm birth. And what Poonam found in all of these cases is that the scientific community shut down the conversation and the research. Barbara Kay is one of the people interviewed in the film, and she is a journalist for the National Post. And she, you know, her article, when the documentary trailer was first released back in October last year, the headline read, "Tough Questions on the Health Risks of Abortion Remain." That's what the documentary set out to answer. The health risks, the public health issues connected to abortion. And, you know, you've got to see it for yourself, because when the National Cancer Institute in 2003 allowed only a 20-minute presentation and no discussion before they wiped out what was absolutely equivocal, absolutely not settled in the research about the links between abortion and breast cancer, they absolutely put women's health at risk, and they absolutely made a determination that women were not going to be receiving full informed consent. That's just the only way that there is to look at it. And again, this filmmaker is considered herself, even at the end of the project, pro-choice. What you mainly see in Hush, as Barbara Kay writes, apart from graphically illuminated revelations of research suppression among health organizations, notably the National Cancer Institute, is the filmmaker talking to people, women whose abortions resulted in physical and psychological complications that they were not advised might happen, an internationally prominent gynecologist who denies that there are any significant consequences whatsoever, and who considers continued research unnecessary. But I'll tell you, by the end of the film, he looks completely foolish because everyone else disagrees with him. You meet a breast surgical oncologist disturbed by her growing roster of patients with aggressive breast cancer in the ages of 25 to 39. Many, with a history of induced abortion. And a statistician studying 8 European Scandinavian countries who finds induced abortion to be the best predictor of breast cancer. They have not secured the funding, as I understand it, for a theatrical release yet for the documentary Hush, but you must follow it. Find the trailer. Go to, again, our Facebook page to take a look at that story from Barbara Kay, one of the people who was interviewed for the film, and your eyes will really be open. All right, let's go back to the phones. We have a caller who wishes to remain anonymous, but welcome all the same to Cradle My Heart Radio. How are you tonight?
Oh, good. I just want to thank you so much for your program, and you're just so honest and vulnerable and so compassionate and caring for women, and I just have appreciated listening to you many, many times. It's helped me in conversations with political comments that are flying from different presidential candidates. Really opens up when people are just talking about abortion. And it's wonderful to say, you know, hey, I am pro-life and I'm pro-woman. And I think we need to be compassionate and kind and help be part of the solution and not be judgmental and critical. But this is a baby. It's not a tissue. It's a human being. And I appreciate your program because you speak the truth in love. And so I just want to thank you for that. I also think sometimes there's pressure from...
You're okay. We've got about a minute remaining, so please finish your thought.
Oh, I was just going to say, I had a dear friend who was mentoring me at a Christian college, and I happened to see her a year later. She had been engaged and did marry a pastor's son, and they got pregnant before, and they didn't tell anybody. They just had an abortion out of feeling the pressure of not to put pressure on his ministry, and they never even talked to him. You know, he probably would have said, no, don't do that, and I just think that there's, you know, we just really need to be compassionate and open. And with my own children, too, who are married now and one who's a freshman in college, we've, because of that story that she shared with me, I've just always told them how much we love them and God loves us. And, you know, whatever happens, this is a baby, you know. And if they would ever be in that situation, please come to us.
Amen. Thank you. Now, stay with us off the air. We'll get your address so we can send you a copy of the DVD, Sarah's Choice. What a wonderful note to end on. Yes, make anyone who is vulnerable to the abortion choice completely aware that they are loved unconditionally by you and that you will stay with them or refer them to those who can help. Thanks for being with us. Go